You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
As we look back on the first quarter, the dominant theme has undoubtedly been the rise of inflation as the number one concern for money managers, surpassing concerns about the pandemic for the first time in over a year. Volatility is also dissipated and equity markets around the world are printing fresh highs. Despite the recent correction leading to a hedge fund imploding, Archegos Capital over in the US, investors remain exuberant. There are hopes of more stimulus, government spending in the form of Joe Biden's big infrastructure program and US Fed liquidity. And they're all displacing fears of a correction right now. But before we get into the technical review and how investors should be approaching this period, I thought Jason Zweig summed up the current environment rather well recently in his Wall Street Journal column. He wrote that this isn't a bull market or a bear market. It's a know-nothing market. Bragging rights used to go to those investors who worked the hardest at learning the most. Now the glory often goes to those who know the least and don't even care. And he was referring to the retail investors that have flooded Reddit and TikTok. And he quoted here a young man who was saying, "I don't know what the hell I'm doing." He was posting a video on TikTok. He said, "I just know I'm making money." And he added that he'd been day trading stocks for 3 days. But just like that, he had made $300 for the day. It's a very new and interesting investing world that we live in, if that is the way people are going to be approaching their investing, a world where individuals are getting expertise from young people, millennials on social media with huge followings. It's effectively the blind leading the blind. So we thought we'd invite Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, to give us some expert insight into what's going on out there at the moment. Adrian, welcome. What a time to be alive when we see TikTokers giving investment advice. What are the risks to investors in the current environment?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, I think you've managed to do actually a rather good job on highlighting the key risks. I think, you know, if we look at all the speculation in markets at the moment, and not just through, you know, all the traditional things that you would have seen in terms of day traders and those kind of things, we're seeing a whole new grouping of innovators in capital markets. You've mentioned Archegos, and also, I mean, we saw what happened with GameStop and Robert Hood, and I mean, even Bitcoin for some would fall into that grouping. So I think with that, obviously, there's an implied risk. Investors need to be rather cautious in terms of how far they venture down those avenues. And obviously, I think the thing that's created the risk there has been, on the one hand, a lot of capital inflow into markets. And typically what you would see, as with most earlier, you know, high levels of stock markets, you would have seen IPOs historically, escalating, et cetera, et cetera. So capital excess tends to lead to these kind of things. But also what's making it exceptionally dangerous at this point in time is the low level of interest rates that we saw globally. So the appetite for exploration is actually quite high. Investors are desperate to seek out other avenues of yields and investments, and obviously that introduces a risk. At the same time, there's a parallel between what's happening there and obviously equity markets under pressure last year, and we've seen a good recovery. But typically when we see volatility pick up like that, investment horizons tend to decrease quite dramatically, and short-term thinking starts to come into play. And I think it's super important at this point in time to be thinking long-term. You've mentioned inflation in our minds as wealth managers and asset managers. You know, that's always been one of our key threats. We try to plan to ensure that we reach goals over the long term well in excess of inflation. But what makes that an exceptionally high risk at the moment is, again, that component of very low interest rates at the moment. So on the one hand, you're not generating inflation beating returns on the short end of the curve from cash and short-dated fixed income investments, which has attracted all the capital flow because, you know, there are some fearful investors out there as well. And at the same time, those low interest rates and easy money could create inflation. So you're getting it from both sides.
And although what you paint is this picture where we're seeing a lot of emotion in markets, and there's this old saying in markets that it's really just driven by two emotions, fear and greed. And there does seem to be a lot of greed out there because of these low interest rates. Why do you think emotional decision-making is such a risk in the investment world?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on where you stand, I guess. In some cases, yes, for sure, a risk. I mean, stand as a spokesperson for our business and how our clients would see it. But from a money manager's perspective, it's also creating a lot of opportunities. I saw it maybe a somewhat crude way of saying it, but the asset manager abroad stating that the way that they make money is they make money off other people's anxiety. Mm. And as crude as what it is, maybe that is actually a quite an accurate and descriptive way of how our markets ultimately work. So, you know, we need to just make sure that we're in the right country and we help our clients and help our teams that decide how we engage to make sure that teammates prevail and we do the right thing and the smart thing. And at the same time, we know that other investors out there are panicking, they're disposing of assets, in a somewhat indiscriminate way. And in that lies opportunities for investors.
And to come back to your earlier point, there is an opportunity emerging around the theme of inflation as well. The Bank of America fund manager survey of the first quarter that I quoted in my introduction showed that globally, money managers now are worried about inflation as the number one concern. Why is that right now the number one issue in markets?
Yeah, I think maybe a bit more accurately, the concern around inflation in itself is maybe not so bad. I mean, in terms of, you know, there's some positives out of inflation in terms of, you know, the currency becomes weaker, but at the same time, it becomes more attractive. Paying off debt is one of the conspiracy theories as well. People assume that you want the weaker currency to make paying off the high levels of debt that we see at the moment a little bit easier. So there's that angle to it as well. But the key risk that comes with inflation is the implied increase in interest rate that will follow. So there's actually quite some interesting history around. So I don't know if you recall Paul Volcker, who used to be the Fed chair going back to the early 80s.
Yes.
At that time, the U.S. was really struggling with out-of-control inflation. I think at the peak, it was just short of 14%. And he had to come in as a new chair. And within 6 months, interest rates were at 20%. And you can imagine what happens to the economy. You're going to get rid of inflation, which is your primary enemy. But ultimately, you strangle the economy to accomplish that. So growth goes away, you end up with bankruptcies and unemployment and all those nasty things. That being said, what we saw back then was, inflation dropped off quite rapidly and they could decrease interest rates again to get the economy going more in line with what the expectation was. But over the short term, the damage is quite lasting. And especially so if you look at the levels where we are at the moment. So if you take, for example, interest rates near zero, and the Fed's long-term expectation is to go towards 2.5, doesn't sound like much to most people, but the key impact there is especially on bonds. So if you test bond sensitivity for each 1% increase in interest rate, that the 30-year bond in the U.S. probably will decline on capital value by 20%. But, you know, that implies that if we're going to see 2.5%, even if it's not this year or next year, maybe the next 3 or 5 years, that implies a 50% decline in your 30-year U.S. bond, which is material. And at the same time, how many investors value assets is by discounting cash flow. So without going into the technicality of it is, essentially, you divide the cash flows by whatever the interest rate is on the short end, and that has now gone from 2.5 to 25 basis points. So all of a sudden, everyone's quite happy to take on higher multiples and valuations, assuming it's immaterial for most. But, you know, again, that discount rate could easily growth tenfold. That's the objective of the Fed, to take it from 25 to 250. And the impact on equities could also be quite significant. So, inflation that could spiral out of control and interest rates that follow, a very material risk for in particular offshore investment, both in terms of equities and fixed income over the next decade.
I mean, if one casts one's mind back to that Volcker period, it was really quite something to behold. If you look at what happened in the US, I recall Presidents Nixon and Carter are becoming desperate enough to tinker with price controls. The unemployment trend in the US went all the way up to close to 10%. It really was. Oil prices were jumping off the charts. So it can be a very volatile ride, that. But we haven't seen inflation just yet. And there's a lot of debate in the market as to why we haven't seen an uptick, a meaningful uptick in inflation. A lot of this is expected inflation, but we haven't yet really seen that inflation coming through. And there are some theories around technology and efficiency gains and all of that. From your vantage point, why haven't we really seen an uptick in inflation?
Yeah, also a very interesting question. So I think the typical economic theory just holds to say that if there's more money in supply, prices should follow. So you find a natural equilibrium of sorts. But then, as always, there's theory and there's practice. And what we saw through earlier monetary stimulus is that inflation didn't really escalate. Some theory say that, well, it was just about to, and then we entered into the next round, and then rates decreased again. So, we always delayed it and kicked the can down the road. From what we see in the data at the moment is, into money supply, which is it's the broader supply of money into the economy, is quite elevated at this point in time, which is obvious given that we've seen a lot of interest rate cuts and we've seen a lot of stimulus plans. So, so that is really self-explanatory. But on the other end is, if you hand out checks and people are largely in lockdowns, either that or they are quite reluctant to spend money. They've just been through a financial crunch. Not like they need to be spending money at the moment. People are quite conservative and would rather like to hang on to that and see how things pan out. Maybe you lose your job. Maybe, you never know what lies in the future. And I think that's just normal, psychology that's playing into the minds of consumers at the moment. And from that, you can see that the savings rates in the U.S. have completely ballooned up. So, as the stimulus packages were rolled out and checks were handed out, the savings rate ballooned up from around 12% to around 35%. Mm. And that money was just not reaching the economy. So, essentially, you need to get to a point where the money is being allocated to drive prices higher. So, what we're seeing now is obviously reduced lockdowns, and that capital is starting to find its way. But on a regional level, we haven't really seen inflation anywhere. The latest U.S. inflation numbers bumped a bit from 1.4 to 1.7. In other places around the globe, inflation has either been quite muted or marginally declining, depending on where you look. And even in the sub-sectors, it's also quite interesting because you can imagine how COVID has impacted specific industries in different ways. So you would see things like travel and anything associated with that, luggage, energy prices, those kind of things were more volatile. So I think the other thing that makes it incredibly complicated at the moment is that you see these large base effects across economic base effects at the moment. So, you've got these lows that were formed, March, April last year. You can get hit with our stock market. If you look at the numbers now, the last 12 months, the stock market is up 70%, and it's because it came off that low base.
Yeah.
And you'll see a similar effect come out in economic numbers and inflation numbers and those things. So you've got to be super careful in terms of how you read those. But at the time, it doesn't seem like these any drastic increases in inflation in any of the regions at the moment. But what do we think? There's a strong possibility as we see money velocity, in other words, how money is being allocated in the economy and how it's circulated, that inflation could ensue.
But it's certainly not there at the moment, as you say. Very interesting. It aligns with an interview I was watching on Bloomberg with Guggenheim, Scott Minard, who also believes the market might be just getting ahead of itself slightly. And what we're seeing is some parallels between the global financial crisis, where liquidity sat on bank balance sheets or was used for share buybacks. And now that liquidity, which has made its way directly into the hands of the US consumer, is sitting on household balance sheets. It's not going out into increasing this aggregate demand that generally pushes up prices. So what should investors do right now, Adrian? Because I think many investors are sitting out there and a little bit fearful, back to the earlier point on emotion, and probably have quite a lot of money in cash right now, which, based on what we've just said, probably not the right decision. What should investors do at the moment?
Yeah, I think last year was actually a very good reminder that the right thing to do in investment markets is often the most difficult thing to do. So, I mean, we've done some interesting work just to simulate some scenarios for investors that, for example, well, this is exactly what we saw in the industry. I mean, many investors exiting equity markets as the declines peaked. So through March, April, a lot of flow go into cash out of equity markets and waiting for the dust to settle. And meanwhile, the dust is settling. Equity markets, as I said, is up 70%. So, I think there is some value in, statistical cliche where asset managers and wealth managers do their best to remind everybody of thinking long-term and sticking to your plan. But as cliched as what they might sound, they're incredibly true and incredibly powerful and not nearly as easy to actually implement as what people would believe. So, the research that we show is that for clients that went up at that bottom into something more conservative versus investors who just stuck to their plan, they're fairly sizable difference in return, obviously depending on risk mandate, etc. But for a typical equity investor, that difference could be as much as 70%. So that part is interesting. I think, just thinking long term, sticking to your plan. Remember, things can be quite volatile for some time to come. There's still a lot of uncertainty around variants and vaccines and lockdowns, all these things, and they could very easily be more volatility, and also notwithstanding the fact that we also live in an emerging market. We're always just around the corner from some calamity, some bad news somewhere, and it's just part of investing. You've got to just think long term. We've mentioned inflation, super important. All these investors that have gone to cash investment, keep in mind that you're currently not generating inflation beating returns. Interest rates are at 50-year lows. So think very carefully. You might feel comfortable today, but eventually you're going to be very uncomfortable later when you don't have sufficient provision in old age, when you need to have built up sufficient capital for comfortable retirement. So I think in short, thinking long term, don't let these speculative things distract you. We see a lot of questions around that sort of thing, and it's just not in our philosophy. I mean, we think long term and we build wealth over time, and we stick to our plan, good plans.
I think a very helpful and insightful framework to help guide investor decision making through these very interesting times, as the old Chinese curse goes. But the bottom line is that volatility in financial markets isn't the real risk that investors face in this current environment. There are many other factors that need to be taken into account. Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth, with the Wealth feature here on Classic Business.